supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The key witness in the criminal case against comedian Bill Cosby wrapped up testimony today after a day and a half of questioning. The defense spent more than 4 hours questioning her claims and probing inconsistencies before prosecutors brought on someone very close to her, her mother. WHYY's Laura Benshoff joins us now from the courthouse to catch us up. So, Laura, Andrea Constan, the accuser in this case, spent a lot of time on the stand being cross-examined. What was the defense's line of questioning like?
So the large part of her time today was taken up with cross-examination by Cosby's lawyers, but there was almost no mention of the night of the alleged assault. Instead, Cosby's attorneys really focused in on events before and after that encounter. You know, the events and the timeline of that night in question are not really open for debate because one piece of evidence in the case is testimony that Cosby gave under oath, corroborating that he gave Constant pills and that he engaged in sexual acts with her. But his lawyer, Angela Agrusa, she tried. She tried really hard. They had subpoenaed all these phone records, and they painstakingly went through more than 50 times that Andrea Constant had called Cosby in the time period after the alleged assault and before she quit her job at Temple University, which is where she initially met Cosby. And, you know, as dramatic as that sounds, it was, you know, like somebody reading a telephone bill over and over again. And Andrea didn't really refute that she made those calls. The defense also, you know, really, because those events themselves aren't a question, they really need to try to cast them in a different light if they're going to sow doubt about, you know, the guilt of their client. They need to show that Andrea was capable of giving consent and that she in fact did, or that that's a possibility. So they've had her talk a lot about her prior relationship with Mr. Cosby and some of the times that they had dinner together, and asking her things like what the mood was, you know, saying, oh, you guys had dinner in front of a fire and you drank cognac, and it wasn't that suggestive of some kind of romantic relationship that you guys were in, which Constant, you know, continually rebuffed.
So, Laura, what was Constant's reaction to all of this?
You know, she spent a long time on the stand, but she was very calm for the most part, and she did push back on the attorneys, you know, when they tried to suggest that things were more intimate with Cosby, or that, you know, the times that she'd spent with him were something more like dates rather than a much older man mentoring a younger woman, which is how she's characterized their relationship. And in her primary testimony, which happened yesterday, her direct testimony, Andrea had said that there were two times when Cosby had, in her words, made a pass at her. He'd put his hand on her leg, or he tried to unzip her pants once. And the defense returned to those occasions over and over again and sort of would rephrase how that could have looked, and trying to get Andrea to just say that it was romantic, and she didn't really budge on that.
And then I understand that Andrea's mother took the stand, and she regaled jurors with some of her conversations with the defendant?
Yes, she did. Andrea's mother, Gianna Constant, who lives in a rural part of Ontario, Canada now, was the final witness of the day, and she was very, very animate and adamant. She was very emotional. You know, she was brought on to kind of be a mirror to what her daughter was going through after the alleged assault. She moved back to move in with her parents outside of Toronto at the time. And, you know, she said her daughter was having nightmares, that her daughter called her while she was driving to work one day and was hysterical and kind of came out with this confession that she thought she had PTSD because she believed she'd been drugged and raped. And later, you know, she sort of describes learning who the alleged assaultee was, that it was this person, Bill Cosby, who's so famous. And she proceeded to call him up and chew him out for 2.5 hours on the phone. And he said he called her mom for the entire conversation and admitted things to her. So it was very colorful testimony. You know, she was very adamant that her daughter in no way consented, you know, even as she also was pushed by the defense, and they really didn't get an inch from her.
All right, Laura, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the update.
Thanks, Mary.
That's WHYY's Laura Benshoff at the courthouse in Norristown. Christopher Wray is President Trump's choice to lead the FBI. Wray was a Justice Department official in President George W. Bush's administration and is currently in the private sector at an international law firm focusing on white-collar crime. Notably, Wray was also New Jersey Governor Christie's attorney during the Bridgegate investigation. So we've invited Herb Jackson, Washington, D.C. reporter for the Bergen Record, for some insight and background into Mr. Wray's career. Hello, Herb.
Good afternoon.
So first, give us a brief sketch about Christopher Wray's work as a partner in the law firm King and Spalding, and also a bit about his time at the Justice Department.
Sure. Well, he's the government investigations practice group head. So he's the guy who represents all the people that he used to be investigating and trying to punish when he was at the Justice Department. So the clients include large international banks that are facing investigations by the Treasury Department and over, you know, foreign regulators, some drug companies facing investigations for off-brand labeling questions. There was a medical device maker that was dealing with some Corrupt Practices Act, and that involves whether you are making payments to foreign officials to try and get your products sold in foreign countries. That's against the law in the United States. They make it illegal to bribe foreign officials. So these companies come under investigation by the Justice Department or various federal agencies. They go to this law firm. This law firm has this guy who used to run the criminal division at the Justice Department under George W. Bush and John Ashcroft, and worked with Jim Comey, the recently ousted FBI director in the Justice Department. So he's got the knowledge and the skill, and they pay his firm to do that. He was also the private attorney that Chris Christie turned to when he realized he needed a lawyer to deal with the lane closures on the George Washington Bridge in 2013.
Sure. So two Christie associates were convicted in that case. Another pleaded guilty. What was Christopher Wray's role here?
Well, Chris Christie was never charged.
He was never charged. Okay.
Testimony in the trial that Chris Christie knew about it as it was happening, and there were also allegations that he knew about it ahead of time. He denied both. And you know, the person who testified that he knew about it while it was happening is awaiting sentencing. He's one of the people who pleaded guilty and agreed to testify against others who were in the conspiracy who were later convicted.
At play was the governor's cell phone, which mysteriously disappeared and then reappeared. Can you get into that for us?
Well, the governor turned over his phone to the government when they started their investigation. And then at one point, the defense attorneys wanted to see it. And they asked the government for it. The government said they didn't have it. They asked Governor Christie for it. He said he didn't have it. And it turned out that Mr. Wray had the phone. The defense attorneys never got to see what was on the phone, but if you recall, the whole scandal broke. It was because one of Christie's deputy chiefs of staff had emailed time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, and the question became, were any of these messages going into Christie's orbit? The judge in the case never let the defense attorney see the phone. We don't know whether there was anything on there or would have been found there.
At one point, years back, Herb, Chris Christie served under Christopher Wray?
Well, Christie was the U.S. attorney for New Jersey, serving up in Newark and running the federal justice system in New Jersey. Wray was the head of the criminal division, so he was nominally over him. He wasn't a direct report, but obviously, if you do criminal cases that have some role that the government Justice Department needs, you would need to report up. He did that.
Herb Jackson, thanks so much for joining us for Newsworks tonight.
You're welcome.
Herb Jackson is Washington, D.C. correspondent for the Bergen Record. This week, members of Philadelphia's Chinese and Mexican communities got together to have dinner with some of the city's mummers. They each prepared a dish unique to their culture. And as WHYY's Peter Crimmins tells us, it was the latest in a string of dining events at the Reading Terminal Market.
A Chinese chef demonstrated how to make pork dumplings, traditionally made for Chinese New Year. And the mummers shared their New Year's tradition, which is made with the same meat. Rocco Galelli, a caterer, demonstrated how to make an Italian stuffed pork loin.
So as you spread the cheese throughout, once it bakes, it will melt, and it will act as a glue, keeping all the spinach and the roasted peppers together.
The after-hours dinner at Reading Terminal Market also featured Christina Martinez, a Mexican immigrant who entered this country illegally. She prepared handmade tortillas with tomatillo sauce, just as she makes in the barbacoa restaurant she co-owns in South Philadelphia with her American husband, Benjamin Miller.
She's living here as an undocumented person, and even though we're married, she still can't get papers.
Mayor Jim Kenney was also on hand to foster intercultural dialogue.
We all have to stick together, and the best way to stick together is to eat together.
The structured dinner started with cooking demonstrations and then eating, and then talking about food traditions. This is the sixth such dinner organized by the manager of Reading Terminal Market, Anuj Gupta.
The last session we did, it was bring together Cambodian community with South Philadelphia residents. Two of them stood up at the end of the night and they said, "We realize we've both been through a similar struggle in terms of our communities." You wouldn't have that exchange necessarily but for something like this.
Gupta got help from Philadelphia's Commission on Human Relations, the same commission that organized cultural sensitivity training for mummers last year in response to offensive behavior during the New Year's Day parade in 2016. The board chair, Rue Landau, wanted to include the mummers in these dinners to continue that multicultural exposure.
Oh, this absolutely is a part of it. There's no doubt. And for a lot of the mummers, they're looking for more opportunities to get to know different groups and to make these connections.
One of the participants in the dinner was Fred Keller from 2nd Street in South Philadelphia.
If I'm from 2nd Street, I'm a mummer.
He used to be the captain of the Joker's Fancy Brigade. Now he's an officer for the Fancy Division.
We're part of the fabric of the city like everyone else, and it's a good way to let people know what mummers are. You know, we're just celebrating New Year's Day like every other culture has their day that they celebrate.
This was the final dinner of the first round of meals. The next round will invite the same cultural groups to share dinners with the goal of learning techniques they can take back to their respective neighborhoods to develop multicultural awareness. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Now that Larry Krasner has won the Democratic primary for Philadelphia District Attorney, the focus shifts to the Republican candidate, Beth Grossman. WHYY's Dave Davies sat down with Grossman to discuss her candidacy.
So the fall election is set. We have a Democratic candidate, Larry Krasner. You will represent the Republican Party. At its heart, what is this race going to be about?
I think this race is really, truly about experience. I have 21 and a half years experience as a prosecutor, and Mr. Krasner has had 30 years as a defense attorney, as well as making a career out of suing police officers for civil rights violations. So we are on two opposite ends of the spectrum and how we approach criminal justice.
He, of course, says he has exactly the right experience because the DA's office has had a wrong-headed approach. They want to charge everything they can, get every conviction they can, and the highest sentences they can. Is he right about that?
No. Mr. Krasner spent much time on the primary disparaging a lot of what the DA's office does. The DA's office is about seeking justice and doing the right thing. And if somebody is wrongly convicted, then we certainly have an obligation to correct that wrong and do what is right. But every day, the prosecutors in the DA's office stand up for and champion the rights of victims of crime that happen within Philadelphia.
After the election, the president of the Police Officers Union said that Larry Krasner's election as DA would be a catastrophe for the police department and the community. Do you agree?
I think in a lot of ways, I think it's hard for a leopard to change its spots. In some ways, I agree with Mr. Krasner that improvements can always be made within the criminal justice system to make things more equitable and fair, especially for those, for often African-American defendants and other minorities, because they are often the ones who are most convicted. And there are other ways to sentence people creatively so they can go on after they serve their sentence and become productive members of society. But this cannot and should not be a grand social experiment to turn the DA's office into a public defender's office. We have one of the finest public defender's offices in the country. We do not need to.
I'm old enough to remember a Republican being elected district attorney in this city, but it's been a while. You know the numbers. I mean, the voter registration edge for Democrats is almost 7-1. Can you make a credible case here, enough to raise money and get support?
I certainly think I can. I think, you know, just looking at social media, there are Democrats who are starting to cross the aisle and look at what and who I am as a candidate, because there are concerns because, look, Mr. Krasner has been backed by, you know, Occupy. He's been backed by Black Lives Matter. And there are people who are Democrats who are not far left like that, who are saying, you know what, this isn't sitting well with me. I'm going to vote Republican for the first time. This woman has experience. You know, she cares about public safety. That is what she is about, not to change what the role of a DA's office is supposed to be. I mean, because we just had a Councilman David O, stabbed in front of his house. Crime is on an uptick. And that is what a DA's office is supposed to do. We have an obligation to prosecute crimes ethically and fairly with a focus upon public safety. And that is truly what distinguishes me from Mr. Krasner.
There's no doubt that crime is a serious problem in a lot of communities of the city, but haven't major crimes gone down in recent years?
They've gone down, but our homicide rate is going up. I mean, for the past several, you know, we had one weekend where 9 people were shot, including a 1-year-old, and we have a long, hot summer ahead of us. So, yeah, there is concern. It's gone down, but it is always going to be there. And if you look at Baltimore, if you look at Chicago, where Mr. Soros has entered into those races, well, I don't have to tell you what happened. They're disasters.
They're disasters in what way?
In that there is so much crime and a lot of bad things are happening and quality of life and public safety has gone down for residents.
And you attribute that to the district attorney candidates that he backed?
Yes.
Yeah. One more thing. There's been some talk, a little bit in the newspapers, about the prospect of replacing you on the ballot with another candidate, maybe a former Democrat who might have more appeal, perhaps an African-American candidate. You've seen these stories. Any chance that you would withdraw from this race?
Let me make this crystal clear. I am in no way, shape, or form withdrawing from this race. I am the Republican candidate for the general election.
Beth Grossman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was WHYY's Dave Davies with Philadelphia's Republican District Attorney candidate Beth Grossman. The current exhibit at the Center for Art in Wood features antique and new mangle boards, wooden boards used to smooth fabric dating back to the 16th century. Despite their utilitarian nature, the boards were often elaborately sculpted and decorated, depicting domestic life in Northern Europe in those times. Tomorrow evening, members of the Patchwork Storytelling Guild will be on hand, telling stories inspired by the mangle boards in a program called Tales of Courtship and Marital Mayhem. One of the storytellers, Denise McCormick, stopped by our studios to give us a sample. Here she tells the legend of the Snow Queen, whose great beauty enticed men to brave an icy fortress and watchful guards to reach her only to die. That is, until one particular suitor found success.
Once upon a time, a handsome young hunter of innocent heart chanced to come upon that callous, cold-hearted queen, and seeing her fell to his knees in humble, silent supplication, so that the ever-ready sentries had no cause to move upon him. And the Snow Queen gazed upon the stranger, and as she looked on, she saw the true and gentle nature of his heart, and she fell in love. And in that moment, in that very instant, the Snow Queen's heart was melted. She uttered a trembling sigh. The air quivered, the world changed, and the demons came. And so quickly did they extinguish the life of that lovelorn lad that his death was almost painless. Yet his body lay broken on the bony crags. The crestfallen fairy wept piteously over her love, and as she did so, a single glistening tear burnt a trail from eye to cheek and fell on the rocky ground below. and there was changed into a small, white, and delicate blossom, the Edelweiss. Glistening, gleaming, glinting, gleaning, such was the allure of the Snow Queen, and such remains the allure of the Edelweiss.
That's Denise McCormick telling the tale of the Snow Queen. Tomorrow evening, she and other members of the Patchwork Storytelling Guild will present Tales of Courtship and Marital Mayhem at the Center for Art in Wood. Well, that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Dave Heller is back tomorrow night for NewsWorks Tonight.